Chris Lorton here, and welcome to the Local Spotlight Show at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. November 11th is Veterans Day, and we at WJBM are taking some time to spotlight our local veterans. This is the second part of Don Munt's Spotlight interview. So you were, were you unconscious?
No, I was conscious.
You were conscious
the
whole time.
Yeah, I was conscious, yeah. I wasn't really hurting. Even though I had my leg and this, and I was hurt, I was hit several places in the leg.
You had your leg was gone.
My leg was gone.
Other long leg was.
I didn't know my leg was gone. That was the thing. I had no feeling. I could not move, and
you didn't know your leg was gone.
I didn't know my leg was gone.
How about your other knee?
I didn't know. I knew it was badly hurt. I couldn't feel my toes or nothing.
And how about your arm?
My arm, I didn't know that. I was hit in the face. I was bleeding all over. I didn't even know I was bleeding.
You couldn't see anything.
I couldn't see. I was blind. Thank goodness that might have saved my life. I might have went into shock if I didn't. I was so thirsty. That's all I could think of. And then I was so scared that I was going to get finished off by Viet Cong at the time, because I didn't know. I thought we was getting ambushed, because where we was at was kind of a bad situation in an enemy camp, and I thought maybe they got around the infantry or something, you know, because the infantry was supposed to be supporting us, you know.
So how long did it take you to get? I mean, did a medic come out there? I mean, they couldn't really do a lot for you.
No, all they done, and I kept telling the medic, I didn't know that my leg was gone.
Okay.
And I'd seen too many times they just cut the leg off if it was really bad, you know, then and there, and put a tourniquet on. And I kept telling them, don't take my leg. And that was all. And the medic, he kept saying, you're going to be all right, you're going to be all right, you know, and this and that. Of course, he had the other guys that work on too, but they was working on me. And then they had to call in helicopters in to get us out. And it just seemed like it was forever, you know. And I was awake the whole time. Then they must have given me morphine, because I was starting, you know how you get with morphine.
Yep.
And I was starting to get like this, but I was trying to stay awake. And then I can remember one of the infantry guys that I'd talked to earlier. He was a big guy, and we'd made friends of. He picked me up, and he said, don't die on me now, don't die on me. And he picked me up, and I must have passed out then. I don't remember being on the helicopter or anything, you know, but it had to take a while, because I really don't know how they got us out as fast as they did without me dying, you know. So they got me out, and Spiegel said they took us to a MASH unit, which was just a big tent.
Yeah.
And he said it was a mess in there. He said they was bringing guys in there right and left, and he said it was just simply a mess in there. And they laid me down. They had me on a tourniquet, and they laid me down by another guy that had died. I guess they thought I had died. And they was working on him and another guy, and I started talking, and they come right over to me, and then I don't know what they done, but I remember just for a few seconds in being in there, but I had morphine on me, and I wasn't in any pain, but I remember this guy talking to me and saying, hang in there or something like that, and then I kind of passed out again, and I don't remember that. And then the next thing I know, I'm waking up on a ship, the Sanctuary.
What? It was
the ship, the Sanctuary.
The ship, the Sanctuary.
Yeah, they called it the Sanctuary back then. It's a big hospital ship. I had took a picture of that ship when we went into Da Nang on that Merchant Marine ship. We went right by it, and it was a huge ship, and it was guarded by aircraft carriers, and it was pretty well protected. Anyway, I woke up on that ship, the Sanctuary. I had morphine on me. I was tearing my bandages off. The nurses that was on the ship, I think some of them were male nurses, started holding me down and everything. Even though I couldn't see, I was imagining them being Viet Cong, and I was trying to pull the bandages off, and they was holding me down, and they finally calmed me down, and one of the lady nurses said, "You're on the ship, the sanctuary. You're safe now." And then I calmed down, and they must give me some more morphine. I was out again, you know. But I do remember tearing my bandage off. They kept telling me, "Now, don't do that. You're going to kill yourself," and this and that. But it just seemed like their faces, and it looked like they had a
But you couldn't see.
I couldn't see, but I was imagining it.
Yeah, right.
It was so scary. But I think it was the morphine doing it, you know. Morphine can play tricks on you, I guess. But anyway, from there, the sanctuary was on its way to the Philippines. I woke up in the Philippines, and I heard, back then they had the old camera where it made a noise, you know, when made the flash and the film forwarded. And it was like a bunch of photographers, and I could hear that, you know. And here I'm kind of high with the morphine, at the time I didn't know where I was at, but I could hear that going on, you know. All of a sudden, a lady, I couldn't see her, but she was standing over my face. It seemed like it was about a foot over my face, and she said, "Can I give you a kiss?" And I thought, well, I thought I was dreaming, really, you know. And I said, well, why not, you know. And she reached down and put gave me a little kiss right on my forehead. That was the only thing that wasn't bandaged.
Bandaged up.
Everything was bandaged. I mean, I looked like a mummy. Then I heard they took some pictures and stuff. And as she left, this corpsman come over to me, and he says, "Do you know who that was?" And I said, "No, I don't know, and I don't care. Get out of here," you know. And I said, "I'm having a dream." And I was just high, you know. And he said, "Well, that was Miss America." And I said, "All right, yeah, sure," you know. But it was. She left her picture and some information there, you know. And they put it in my duffel bag, and I got it back to the States and everything. And that was kind of different. But then from there, they sent me to Japan, and that's when I had my first eye surgery. I probably already had several other surgeries in between. And a Japanese doctor, when I woke up, said, "Can you see this light?" And I could see the light out of my left eye, and that tickled me to death, you know. That's all I could see was that light shining there, you know. Then they gave me some more morphine. I don't know how long I was there. And then I come back to the States. They told me that I was at an Air Force base one night. I don't remember that. They must have kept me high there. And then next thing I know, I woke up at Valley Forge General Hospital in Philadelphia, or Pennsylvania. I spent 7 months there. Or 5 months there. I take that back. 5 months there. From there, I had to come back to St. Louis. They sent me to John Cochran's. I'd got infection in this left eye. It also blew out my eardrum in my left ear. Had that. But a specialist from St. Louis, they sent me back here and to John Cochran, and he rebuilt that whole inside my ear. And that was one of my worst operations.
Was it?
Oh, man, I felt like I got hit in the head with a sledgehammer for about 3 days. It was bad. But it worked for a little while, but I can't hear anything out of it now. So I've operated with one eye and one leg and one ear for several years, you know. So,
When did you and Doris get together?
We got married August the 16th, 1969. Yeah, we'd been married, or we'd been going together in 2.5 years. Yeah, before that,
so you were married before?
No, we weren't married. We'd just been dating and stuff before I went to Vietnam. I didn't want to get married knowing I'd be going to Vietnam.
But when you got back, you got married.
After I got to where I get on my feet and stuff and everything and get going, that's when we got married. While I was in Philadelphia, I always wanted to raise hogs. My dad raised Duroc hogs for years out there on the farm, and of course I showed hogs when I was in high school and stuff, and that's what I wanted to do. Back then, everybody, you know, they had a lot of hogs and stuff, and I wanted to raise purebred hogs too. So after I got hurt, I didn't know if I could do that or not.
Yeah.
And while I was out there in Philadelphia, they had a lot of volunteer people coming out there. They was very good. The people out of Philadelphia Pennsylvania was very good to come out to Valley Forge and bring cookies into the veterans that was hurt. Now, we're not talking about a little hospital. This hospital hold was huge.
Okay. Hey, if you're just joining us, I have Don Muntz and his wife, Doris Muntz, is sitting in with us. Don is a Vietnam vet. I'm just talking about his experience over in Vietnam.
Each room was held 24 guys. There's 24 guys to a room, and you had a section right through the center. There'd be four of us in one little compartment. But it was all open. All it was curtains they'd pull together every once in a while if you had to. They had to come in and change your bandage, and then if there was visitors in there and stuff. But it got pretty noisy, especially newcomers.
I bet.
And, yeah, a lot of pain. Back then they had to stretch the skin over your stump, and that was all open, and then they had to change that daily, and it hurt so bad. Even under at a certain point, they couldn't give you any more morphine, and I even had a hard time getting off of it, and a lot of guys did, and because you was on it so long, and that was hard right there.
Yeah,
and not, let alone going with the pain every day, you know, and stuff, and. Of a night, there was a lot of screaming and stuff going on. But anyway, we made it through it. And there's a couple guys that tried to commit suicide on our room, but it was because one particular instance, his wife come and or a girlfriend. He was going to get married. He was a sergeant. He was a tank. In a tank, and the tank had hit a mine, and it killed most of the guys, or the other guy that was in the tank. I think there's two or three guys in that tank, but he ended up getting having an arm and a leg blown off, and then he got a Dear John.
Oh, Dear John letter.
And he tried to commit suicide, and then there was another guy next to me. He got one, and he tried it one night, and I had to call the nurses on him, and when they do that, then they move him out, and they put him in a different area, and then they bring somebody else in. So
were you able to go back to the farm and raise Duroc?
No. As I mentioned earlier, we had volunteers come in pretty much daily, and this one woman, she was kind of a nurse volunteer. I guess that's what you'd call her. She wasn't in the military, but I think they was probably paying her. But anyway, she was helping out, and we got to talking, and she'd come around to the beds and stuff, ask different guys what they used to do and all that. And I said, I used to raise hogs. I don't know if I can do that anymore. And she said, well, you ever consider raising small animals or something like that? And I said, what kind of animals? She said, like rabbits. And I said, I never thought of it, never heard of it. And she says, well, my husband raises rabbits for research here. And I said, he does. And she brought me in some information. I kind of got interested in it.
Yeah.
And so one weekend, when I got to where I got a, it wasn't a permanent leg, but it was a leg you could kind of walk on. They called them I've forgotten now what they did call them. But anyway, her and her husband come in there and got me, took her out there, and I was really impressed with these operations, these rabbits. White New Zealand white rabbits, thousands of them.
Oh, wow.
So they give me more information. I got to studying on that, and I got to studying on guinea pigs and different types of research animals. So when I come back, got well, got married and everything, I decided I was going to do that, and that's
what you've been doing.
What I've been doing over the years, and got tied up with some labs, and then I sold a lot of. Rabbits, back then, a lot of people raised rabbits in their backyards and stuff to eat. You know, rabbits are high protein, and we was trying to convince people that then, because it was a good, clean meat, high protein, and it's pretty good if you like rabbit. But we sold a lot of cages, and I got a dealership with a couple of companies and sold cages and equipment and medicine. A lot of producers around there didn't know where to go for the medicine. I'd studied how the diseases on the rabbits, just like you would a veterinarian. I knew just about as much as some of the local veterinarians on the rabbits, you know. And
you became a rabbit authority.
Yeah, people would call me up and ask me, and some of them bring their rabbits, and I wouldn't let them come in the rabbitry, but I could. And then I went to several people's rabbitry and, you know, told them what they was doing wrong and what could be the problem and this and that. I started raising purebred rabbits too, and I kind of got interested in show rabbits. And to make a long story short, I ended up being the head of the commercial department in the American Rabbit Association. I'd done it for 2 years, but that got to be too much of a chore. But during that time, I got tied up with an outfit that shipped hogs and chickens and stuff overseas, and they've never shipped rabbits before, and I got to talking with them, and by golly, there was a market for it overseas, and I shipped back then, we was friendly with Venezuela. I shipped quite a few rabbits there. I shipped them to South Korea, Peru. I can't remember all the countries I did ship rabbits to. I had to build my own transport cages, and they had a big plane they'd come in, and they'd I took them to Bloomington, and then they put them on this plane, and they had to make compartments for the rabbits. My cages had to fit in those compartments above the hogs and stuff, and then they ship them whatever country they made the deal with, you know. The biggest deal I had was with Japan. I shipped 250 to Japan in one deal. But when they got over there, the Japanese they had a quarantine going on, and they weren't set up for the rabbits, so they turned them loose in where the hogs would run on, had been running, and they put straw down in big pens.
Yeah.
And they all got sick. And so they tried to come back on me a little bit there. But I was USDA inspected, had them inspected. They were inspected before they left, and they was inspected when they got over there. But they just didn't take care of them right. So they end up buying another bunch, you know. So I ended up selling them 500 right there, you know. So.
Well, you know, you've taken a very, very bad situation and just made it good. Yeah. Just kept going, didn't you?
Well, I don't give up or anything. I mean,
you're blind.
Well, I was just blind recently. Actually, it was about 2020 when I started really going blind, and okay. 21 right in there. And I could still see just a little bit to get around, but I couldn't drive anymore.
Uh-huh.
And I just kept getting worse and worse. And finally, I already had two cornea transplants where they took the inner cornea out and put it in. I got along pretty good for a while. But then this last one, the outer cornea thickened up. I got glaucoma in it, and they just kept treating it, but it just kept getting worse. So I had a surgery, I think it was a year ago, April, and during surgery, the pressure shot up in my eye. It went all the way up to 60, and it's supposed to be down around 14. And when it did, a blood vessel busted in the back, and once that happened, they tried another surgery to drain out the blood and everything, but it was almost already too much damage, and I'm blind for life now. So,
well,
and I'm still working, but yeah. I mean, I don't work like a normal person, but I still do a little carpenter work. As long as she's around for my eyes to help me, I still run a cutoff saw and stuff like that. She don't like it, but I get her done as long as she gets me lined up in there, you know. But what I do when I drill my holes and screw my boards in or whatever my carpentry work is, I feel it first, and then I imagine what it looks like because I've done it pretty much, you know, all my life. I've done something like that, and I built my own buildings and stuff out there, and so I knew a lot about that. So anyway, well,
Don, I want to thank you for your service, and you know, my hat is off to you. You're something else. Actually, we are distant cousins, aren't we?
Yeah, right. Yeah,
we all descend from Robert Lorton, our great 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 grandfather, so Don, thanks for coming in. Doris, thanks for coming in, and I wish you nothing but the best.
Thank you.